If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to episode number 21 of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to all the previous podcasts. I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the man that is the reason this podcast happens. He was the editor of Power Slam for years and years and years, author of the ebook series of the Power Slam books, which you can get on Amazon and plenty other places. Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Kenny. How's yourself today on this fine Friday evening, which we're recording a little bit late this week?
We are. We're recording a little bit late. I had a funeral to go to yesterday, so we're recording a little bit late. I was good. You know, I got up today and I was feeling quite decent, and then I made the mistake of switching on Stephanie McMahon and Lorraine Kelly, and I began to feel quite nauseous very quickly, and I couldn't get through it. I got 2 minutes into the 5 minute clip, but you'd also posted about this. I'm just firing right into it this week. You'd posted about this on your Facebook, and Stephanie McMahon said the following quote: "WWE is no different than a great book, movie, even an opera or a ballet." Any thoughts, Finn?
It's just the way they want to present themselves to the world, which is not actually based on the reality of how their product is viewed by everyone else. I think that really sums it up, Kenny.
Well, I think to sum it up even better was one of your friends on Twitter, Lee Dickinson, props to Lee, who said, she's right. Every time I watch Swan Lake, I complain about the bad booking and the putting over of the old swan.
great line, Lee.
it's just, the thing is, like, she is... The problem with Stephanie is that she actually is quite a good PR woman, and she is quite likable in that way, if you've never watched her on television. You know? It's like...
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I just think it's... They see it as it's this whole, like, you know, Walter White kills somebody on Breaking Bad, and then Bryan Cranston goes on the Today Show and talks about it and laughs, and they see it as the same thing. But I don't know, maybe wrestling fans just don't see it that same way. And plus, Walter White would put people over once in a while.
Yeah, it's you only see themselves as this, as a particular way. I mean, so why not just admit that we're wrestling? You know, why not just admit we are wrestling? This is what we do. We do it better than anyone else. We are a wrestling company, and say, well, we've got elements there, and you know, good versus evil. But it's just like somebody's come up with that line for, oh, you've got to say this, Stephanie. It'll really impress the people that know nothing about WWE. But it's like, it's the people that know something about WWE that, or the people that will potentially watch WWE, which she's trying to appeal to through these mainstream appearances, they're going to see that it's actually not as she describes it. So why not just say it's, you know, wrestling? You know, it's in wrestling with good versus evil. And she said, yeah, we have, you know, resolution in there, you know, antagonist, protagonist, and we have this. You could use that those words to describe it, but I just feel like I remember Jim Cornette saying years ago, you know, that's why they came up with sports entertainment, because they were embarrassed to call themselves wrestling. And I think that's really a shame. You know, I think there's something really sad about that, Kenny.
Do you think there's a positive connotation now to the word sports entertainment, or do you think people roll their eyes? Would you think it's the more prominent one?
I don't think it really matters so much anymore that people refer to it as sports entertainment. I think I actually used those words in last week's podcast or the week before. And I remember afterwards thinking, wow, I can't believe I actually called it sports entertainment. And I was beating myself up about that pretty bad, Kenny. You know?
As you should. A man of your stature lowering yourself.
But I don't think it's really got a negative stigma anymore. I mean, I think it's been used so much now that people recognise that when you use the term sports entertainment, it's in reference to pro wrestling, because let's face it, sports entertainment does not refer to anything else, does it, Kenny?
No, no, it's a one-stop it's funny, but I think when you hear it about like WrestleMania and stuff, it just works, right? It's like, yeah, the biggest event in sports entertainment, whatever, but like, I don't know, I do remember, you know, it's funny you mentioned about how you started saying it, when WWF became WWE in 2002, I remember thinking, I'm never going to get used to calling it WWE. Never. And then now, you know, just calling it WWF just feels like talking about your ex-girlfriend, you know?
Yeah, well that was, yeah, May 2002, so I mean, we are like 15 and a half years in, basically, so...
Do you know the thing I miss the most, which is funny, the thing I miss the most about it all... is I miss when Howard Finkel would say the following contest is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Because you can't say it, this is for the World Wrestling Entertainment Championship. It just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I mean, well, for a while they actually dropped, they rebranded themselves as just simply WWE, didn't they? At one point.
Yeah. I think they still are, technically. Like, I can't remember the last time they said the words World Wrestling Entertainment. You very rarely hear that term from them.
Yeah, very rarely, yeah. So it's, but you're right, yeah, World Wrestling Federation, it had, you know, it really had some sort of prestige to it, didn't it? You know, when those three words were uttered, you're like, wow, this is going to be big, you know, World Wrestling Federation. It just felt like a mighty company, a titan of a company, Kenny.
A titan of a company. I see what you did there. I remember in like 2008 or 2007, they would start bringing out like stuff with legends, and they would have the old WWF logo, but without the F bit.
Yeah.
Nothing infuriates me more than that logo. Nothing. It's just the worst thing ever. I mean, it's not the worst thing ever, but you know what I mean. Anyway, so a lot of different kind of little bits and pieces we're going to talk about this week. Lance Russell passed away at 91. Obviously, he's way before my time, and I was never really in a position to watch any of his stuff. You know, he was in Memphis, and we didn't really get any of that over here, and by the time I started watching, there wasn't an internet yet, so you couldn't really watch... Yeah, so he was just... He never really crossed paths with me, but by all accounts, everybody talks about he was one of the best wrestling hosts of all time. He's very revered. Seems like a very nice man. Any thoughts on his passing?
Oh, I mean, he was absolutely terrific. Yeah, I mean, he worked for WCW from 89 through to 92. I mean, if you were watching, did you ever watch any of the WCW programs really late at night? I mean, you're probably too young to be watching in like 88, 89, really late at night.
I kind of missed all that kind of stuff. Like, because I remember ITV used to have it on at a ridiculous time, didn't they? Like 3 in the morning or 2. It was ridiculously late.
I was too young. Yeah, it would be called Superstars of Wrestling in the listings. And, you know, you'd set the old VCR if you had one, or you'd stay up and to watch. You never really knew what it was that you were going to see. And sometimes it would be WCW and sometimes it would be WWF. Sometimes you'd get like a really good match, and mostly it would be a bunch of boring squash matches that, you know, were just interminable. But Lance Russell commentated on many of those. And yeah, it was a outstanding commentator and also interviewee. That was really what he was famous for, particularly in Memphis. He worked for the Memphis territory for Nick Goulas and then Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett after 77 when they set up on their own after they split from Goulas. Lance was the guy who would he would commentate on the matches, and then he would interview the wrestlers. And USWA as it became, or Memphis as it was known, CWA had lots of different names. The Memphis territory, it was universally known as. That they produced a live 90-minute TV show every Saturday morning. So it had to be put together. It was, you know, these shows were not scripted. You know, people just had to be able to deliver the promos. So what would happen when it was, Lance would be there doing the commentary on the matches, then the match would end, then he would interview the talent. And what Lance was renowned for and revered for was for really guiding newcomers through promo segments and setting things up and working really well with both babyfaces and heels as well. He would get them both over, really good at working with both. I mean, there's tons of footage of Lance. on YouTube. And when you go back and look at it and you think, wow, you know, he was having to do that on a live 90-minute show. It wasn't scripted, and he just had to bring it each week in match after match and segment after segment, often in some of the most crazy angles you've ever seen. I mean, he would have known what was coming up, of course, but Lance didn't know exactly what was going to be said because it was all ad-lib back then, just like our podcast, Kenny. So, you know, Lance was really the master at really holding the show together. You know, he was terrific, really good announcer. And as you say, he was a nice guy as well, very well respected in the industry. I mean, I think it was Jerry Lawler who made the announcement that he passed away. And, you know, Lawler held him in the highest regard, you know, for leaving Nick Gulas in 77 and coming over and working with Lawler and Jarrett on their new enterprise. Lance Russell was a huge part of that. So, yeah, check him out on YouTube. I wrote a story of it on Lance on the PowerSlam Facebook, which you can read at PowerSlam Online. That's on there. If you want to read that piece, and there's some links as well to some of Lance's interviews with like the Blonde Bombers, Lawler and Bill Dundee, and also Jim Helwig and Steve Borden, who of course made their sort of big time debut for the Memphis Territory as the Freedom Fighters in, I think it was 85.
Wow, there you go. It almost seems to me, just from what I've heard about people talking about him and stuff, that he kind of felt like maybe Memphis's version of Mean Gene Okerlund. Maybe like that kind of, like, not exactly, but like, you know, because Gene Okerlund, although he would do different things, he was the WWF host, really, or the AWA host. He would, and it kind of strikes me that Lance is probably similar to him in that way.
Yeah, Okerlund was more of a backstage interviewer. Whereas Lance would do it all. But yeah, there was definite similarities there. And Okerlund was held in high regard as well for working, you know, brilliantly with talent and really getting the best out of both babyfaces and heels and reacting accordingly to whatever they said. And that's obviously a huge part of it, you know, condemning the heels, you know, and just, you know, urging the babyfaces, you know, to do the right thing, you know, and to win that next big match and, you know, sympathizing with them after they've been beaten down, you know, just doing all those little things you don't even really think about until you see someone who's on screen who can't do them well.
Yeah, and I also heard a really, really interesting story. So Randy Hales, Memphis wrestler, when he was in high school, apparently, in like the 70s, I think it was, that he was... for whatever reason, they had a lot of snow days, and this is just how big Lance Russell was in Memphis. Like, so they had a lot of snow days in school, so they end up having to come in and do some school on, like, Saturdays, which, you know, I would never have agreed to, but there you go. So anyway, so they were in school on this Saturday, and the teacher apparently said, right, guys, we're going to, you know, we're in on Saturday, so we're going to take our lunch between 11 a.m. and 12:30, and they wheeled in a television to put on Memphis Wrestling. And all the boys are like, yeah, look, every boy's into it, and all the girls are like, what the fuck is this? And but that was how big it was, that, you know,
yeah. I mean,
imagine a school teacher telling you your lunchtime so that the TV can be brought in to put on the morning wrestling. It's just a baffling concept now, but that's how big he was, and how big that show was, and a lot of the reason that show was so successful was due to him. So
definitely.
91's, I mean, a good run.
Locally, it did enormous ratings, absolutely huge numbers. It was the top rated program in the market. So it's no wonder that people didn't want to miss it.
Yeah, so just like people don't want to miss this podcast. I mean, we maybe don't pull in as many numbers as that, but you never know. So obviously, we always kind of do a bit of a Raw breakdown or SmackDown breakdown. Before we talk about Raw, I want to ask you a little bit about Bayley, because Bayley did an interview this week with Metro in the UK, and she was asked about turning heel, and here's what she said, and I want to get your take on it. She said, "It's something I think about because I know anything is possible when you're with WWE. I don't know if I have to go to the dark side, although I do read all the tweets and do know it's what the fans are kind of hoping for. As a performer, I need to change in the ring, to be a little bit more aggressive and go about things in a different way, rather than Bayley following the rules all the time. I might have to bend the rules using a little bit. I might need to bend the rules a little bit to get what I want this time round. I realised when I was out with my injury that I need to go about things differently and not let people push me around so much."
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an acknowledgement that things need to change with the character. Since she returned, she hasn't been booed, which has been encouraging. I mean, before she left, it was getting quite embarrassing for her, really. I mean, you actually felt for her, the reaction she was getting in some parts of the country. So, I mean, it's hard to know, isn't it? Can that character really work as a heel? And since we know it's designed to sell and market merchandise to young kids, would they stop supporting her if she was a villain? So it's a tricky one, really. She's the sort of character, she's probably the last female performer that WWE would want to turn heel because of the potential downturn in merchandise sales as a result of that. But maybe she can toughen up the character and do things that her fans would still support, because she could be seen to be doing the right thing against a villain who had crossed her first, and it was they were receiving their just desserts. Like, I always remember Kenny, one of the really great moments of a babyface breaking the rules, but it was justifiable, was when Randy Savage beat Ric Flair at WrestleMania 8, and we'd had that whole long Elizabeth and Ric Flair storyline, where Flair was claiming that she was mine before she was yours, Randy. And it was just, Flair was making all these ridiculous accusations, and all these, Flair was just really completely healing it up big time. And then Savage like held the tights when he scored the pin, and like it was seen as like justified cheating. Like, you know, it was okay because Flair had pushed him to it. So I think if a babyface character is pushed to it and he's seen to be responding in a way that is appropriate to a villain who is completely, you know, has crossed the line so many times, I think that can be cheered. And I think even young kids would cheer Bayley doing that, because she would sort of explain it and say, well, listen, I've got to do this. I've got to fight fire with fire. You know, I'm always, you know, I'm here for you, I'm here for the fans, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, when times get really tough and when things get really rough in the ring, you know, I'm going to have to do things that I normally wouldn't do because I have to win for you, or however they dress it up. So, yeah, I hope they do that with the character, and hopefully she'll continue to be cheered.
I think it's going to be difficult for her in the sense of, you know, because, I mean, the thing is, Sasha seems like she was someone who would eventually turn... the thing with Bayley, I always kind of come back to is I just think on the main roster she's not really done much that's been exciting.
No,
you know, like,
I agree.
The Alexa Bliss feud was just dull, and I mean, you know, part of the problem is Alexa Bliss is not great in the ring, which, you know, some people don't like to hear, but it's true. Like, she's getting better, but she, you know, you couldn't put Alexa Bliss out in the main event of a Brooklyn takeover in front of 15,000 people and have people going crazy for it. But you could with Bayley before, so. Yeah, I don't know what the future has for her, but hopefully it's something interesting, especially with Asuka coming in. You know, she's going to need to step up, so...
Definitely, definitely. But I think all characters should evolve, Kenny, and this is something that we don't see enough of in WWE. And if you, you know, you watch a TV show that's very well written, and the characters should just evolve as the show continues. I mean, you know, we were hearing earlier about how Stephanie McMahon telling us, you know, how brilliantly scripted WWE programming is. Well, prove it by developing your characters and making them grow, so we can see them grow and we can, you know, follow their journey. You know, most of those characters, Kenny, don't even have a journey. As you say, Bayley, what's she done? She hasn't really gone anywhere or done anything. Let's see some growth from her as a character.
Yes, yeah, so we'll see where she goes. Now, we are going to talk about Raw and SmackDown here, but after that, we are going to talk about something that I never thought we'd get to talk about. Finn Martin, the esteemed wrestling journalist, took time out of his week, not to watch Impact, but to watch John Cena on Total Bellas. On Season 1, Episode 1, the infamous dinner speech, where John Cena explains the rules of the house to his other half, Nikki Bella, to mother, Kathy, and Johnny Ace, and to Daniel Bryan and Brie. So just let that salivate in your mind that Finn will be discussing that, and I'm sure
just
we all know which.
Just let that one digest for a moment. I'm trying to digest it still, Kenny.
Like food poisoning, you're still trying to get over it.
Still trying to recover.
Still trying to recover. So Raw this week was a bit of a slog. I'd say, you know, it didn't feel like it was the quickest show to get through, but there was some good stuff on it. For me, the highlight of the show was definitely The Miz and Roman Reigns. I thought they did a great job, and I loved like The Miz coming out through the crowd as part of the Shield. Miz getting to look like a competitive threat for once, you know, actually kicking out of a Superman punch, and you know, there was a couple of good near falls in the match, and Sheamus and Cesaro interfered, which kind of, I guess, maybe bringing Sheamus and Cesaro into this kind of Shield reunion storyline. What did you think of Raw this week, and what were your highlights?
Yeah, I would say that was one of the highlights for sure. There was a lot of questions about Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel's suitability for a six-man match with the Shield, understandably so. So it seems from what we saw this week on Raw that Dallas and Axel are out and Sheamus and Cesaro are in instead, which I think also it matches well with the storyline as well, because obviously Ambrose and Rollins have been battling Cesaro and Sheamus since SummerSlam. So it all ties in quite nicely. So I enjoyed that as well. I'm interested to see where this goes and how long this Shield reunion, which they teased at the very end of the show, presumably that's coming, if not, presumably next week. Will it be next week? Or if not next week, the week after. Presumably we're going to have a six-man match between the Shield and Miz and Cesaro and Sheamus at TLC. That's what they're saying is coming on the TLC show, right, Kenny? That's what they're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, because the poster for TLC is basically the three Shield guys. So, and yeah, it doesn't mean, I think the thing is, you could do the Miz Taraj, and it wouldn't really mean that much because you know that Axel and Dallas are not really on that level. But I think adding Cesaro and Sheamus really does make it makes the match a lot more exciting, and I think definitely propels it to being a legit main event.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Presumably it will be a stipulation match since it's TLC. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. What else was on the show? Seth Rollins did the job to Braun Strowman, so they're attempting to repair the damage that was inflicted upon the Strowman character at No Mercy when he lost in less than 9 minutes to Brock Lesnar. Really just felt like a nothing match, and when Rollins lost, it's like it didn't really matter to him because he's part of something else. His real focus is the upcoming Shield reunion and the feud with Miz and Cesaro and Sheamus. And it just sort of feels like Braun's lost a lot of steam. I mean, I don't know how they're going to put this guy back together, Kenny.
Yeah, I don't really know where he goes for the pay-per-view. I love him to death. So I think he's fine just now. But I think the problem is once he's faced Brock, he really needs to go into something else quite big. And I'm sure he'll be part of, you know, Team Raw Survivor Series and have a great show in there. But who is his next feud? Who is the next person to try and take him down? I don't know.
Some people have said, oh, he's gonna battle Bray Wyatt if this Wyatt versus Finn Balor feud ever ends. But I mean, that's not gonna really do anything for Braun. So it's hard to know really how Braun can really benefit from that feud. We also had this cryptic Sister Abigail business with Braun Strowman when he appeared on the big screen. What do you know about that, Kenny? Are we going to get a Sister Abigail as a woman?
From what I've heard, apparently the plans are that Sister Abigail might be an alter ego of Bray Wyatt, which I think would be kind of cool. It'd be, you know, a little bit Norman Bates could be something interesting. I think the problem is that it feels a little bit like too little too late because, I mean, Bray Wyatt is just like... Do you know what Bray Wyatt's like? Right? So, do you like cheese, Finn? Do you enjoy cheese?
I certainly do, yes.
Okay, so do you enjoy a bit of cheese on toast?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, classic, right?
And you know the classic, working class snack.
Working class snack. You cannot beat, and then the cheese bubbles on the toast, and you know, it's a crisp bit of toast, and it's just perfect, right? The problem is, Bray Wyatt is now that, instead of being that melted cheese on the top of your toast, Bray Wyatt is that pre-packed cheese that you could literally set it on fire and it will never melt. That's what he is now. He, like, you know, we want it to melt and it just isn't melting. It just stays there. It just stays, you know, grated. and just doesn't do anything. And Bray Wyatt used to be a character who would really engage you, and, you know, the John Cena storyline was really good, apart from the fact that John Cena wouldn't put him over. But, you know, it was good.
That was the beginning of the end for Bray Wyatt, Kenny.
That was. And then, you know, I think that actually the most baffling decision of all was the Undertaker thing at WrestleMania 31. It just... And I'm the biggest Undertaker fan you'll ever meet. Like, I think Undertaker's great, and I, you know, hope he comes back and does one more to, you know, that he can go out on a higher note than he did. But I just think having Bray Wyatt work for a month, or 2 months even, to promote this match with no Undertaker appearances.
Yeah.
And then Undertaker to come back. And essentially, apart from the crabs thing where, you know, where Wyatt's doing the spider walk thing and Undertaker sits up, that was the only spot in the match that was memorable. Apart from that, it was a house show match. A house show match at a WrestleMania, you know? And,
I guess the Wyatt versus Randy Orton House of Horrors match was pretty grim as well. And also at WrestleMania this year when they were beaming all those images on the ring. I mean, what was that?
I would argue the Undertaker thing is the worst because he sat for a month. The character of Bray, you know, you're talking about, right, so Stephanie's talking about, you know, antagonist, protagonist, and conflict resolution and all that sort of stuff. So if Bray Wyatt comes out for 6 weeks and talks about how he's going to be the new face of fear, that's his goal, is to beat The Undertaker and become the new face of fear. And then when he loses, the character does not react to the loss in any way, shape, or form. I don't even know if Bray Wyatt mentioned it again after WrestleMania. And I just thought, even if he's going to lose, like, make something interesting out of it. Like, give us a story of, you know, Bray Wyatt becoming unhinged because he thought he was going to be the new face of fear and he realised that his powers aren't as strong as they need to be, or whatever the story is you're going to tell.
Yeah.
Instead, it just didn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter to the character, it doesn't matter to the audience. I mean, it doesn't matter to the audience, that's when you're really in a losing battle.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been on a downward spiral now for years. And it is a real shame. And you're right, nothing, whenever he loses, it never matters. And nothing that he does ever really makes any difference to anything that he does next. I mean, what he said this week on Raw was, he said that Sister Abigail was alive and she was dying to meet Finn Balor. So, I mean, to me, I've written this before, to me, Wyatt needs to either put together a new family with new people, or he needs to find some sort of mentor. Maybe a Jake Roberts type or someone like that. I don't know. Anyone, somebody that's got some sort of background or some sort of credibility that can enable him to be reborn. And when he is reborn, he has to be different to how he has been for the last 3 years. I mean, the character, you know, I mean, it's such a shame, Kenny, because he's really good in the ring. I mean, he can move he can move so fast for a big guy. He does all sorts of different things. His matches and not usually predictable. I mean, I think he's a hell of a performer in the ring, but that's really not recognised because the character is just lost.
I think the fact that... Because the problem is, I think because the character's lost, he doesn't have classic matches, ever.
Mm.
The last classic match he had was against Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble in 2014. You know, since then he's had good matches and stuff, but for whatever reason, it's just not really hit. And, you know, the thing is, Undertaker didn't have classic matches for the first few years, but the character was so good, you know, and so bonkers, that it worked. And then later on, he was able to, you know, I mean, Undertaker arguably didn't start having great matches until 96 with Mick Foley.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's, what, five and a half, 6 years before he started having that, so...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, And then the cruiserweights main event in Raw again, which, all right, so this is, I'm gonna try and make an analogy here. So this is what they did on Monday. Do you ever remember? I'm gonna use an old school reference, just because I feel like when we're on the Power Slam podcast, we can reference stuff from the Power Slam years. Do you remember in the mid 90s when Pamela Anderson was huge on Baywatch?
Yes.
Right, and then she did that Royal Rumble thing, and then you remember she made the movie Barb Wire.
Yeah.
Okay. The main event segment was like Pamela Anderson coming into your bedroom, dressed like the character in Barbed Wire, which is basically Kurt Angle coming out and saying, "We've got a new cruiserweight," and then she's about to take her clothes off, and she has a dick. Kalisto is the dick.
Or it's Mae Young at Raw Rumble 2000.
It's Mae Young at Raw Rumble 2000 underneath there, yeah. You're all excited. You're, oh my god, what is underneath there? I can't wait to see it. Oh no, it's Mae Young. So like, that's, you know, Enzo's talking trash about everyone. He's cutting really good promo. And you're like, oh, who's going to save the day? And then Kurt Angle comes out and he's like, I've got a new cruiserweight. And everyone's wondering, oh, could it be, is it going to be Johnny Gargano? Could it be Rey Mysterio? Could it be, oh, it's Kalisto.
Kalisto. I mean, it was just...
I've had more exciting shits than Kalisto.
I mean, last week I said, you know, after last week's massive drop-off in the third hour in the viewership, I said, there's no way they're going to put the cruiserweights on last again. And they put the cruiserweights on last again, Kenny, just to make me look foolish.
That's the only reason it makes sense, because otherwise, why the fuck did they do it?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, third hour was... Raw this week opened 2.945 million viewers. By the third hour, it was down to 2.619 million. Lowest rated Raw in nearly 4 months. You know, the Washington versus Kansas City game on ESPN drew nearly 12 million viewers. So that would no doubt be a big part of the reason why their numbers were down. But it was just like, you know, if you've got nearly 3 million people who are willing to watch the show in the first hour, and you've run like nearly 400,000 of them off by the third hour, that tells you that you're not presenting a very compelling show. And by the time the cruiserweights arrived for that final segment, it was like people are just like, we've had enough. You know, we don't want to watch the show anymore.
I thought the cruiserweight segment was good. I thought the problem was that they built up a surprise, or they built up here's someone to come and save the day, and nobody cared or bought what that payoff was, you know.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you actually watch that cruiserweight segment, Kenny, I mean, people really, I mean, there was just almost no reaction in the arena, and there's Enzo dishing out all these insults, and you know, the writing team sat there all week, right, let's come up with all these insults to knock what we really think about all these guys. Here you go, Enzo, memorize all this. And I've got to say, I give him credit, that was a long speech that Enzo had to memorize. And he did that really well. And he is really good on the mic. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe this is a guy that they can make something of in the long run. You know, with this character, this almost sort of oblivious, vainglorious heel who doesn't care that people loathe him. You know, maybe they can do something with this guy. I don't know what.
I think he's great. I thought that he was going to be the kiss of death to the cruiserweight division. But actually, and maybe I'm part of the problem, but I've never been more interested in watching the cruiserweight segments on Raw before. And every time he comes on, I'm interested. I'm kind of,
well, I mean, they're giving him something to do, really, aren't they? I mean, they're giving him something to say, even though everything he's saying is to the detriment of all the other talent. So I mean, they are at least giving him something to work with. They believe in him as a talker, and he can certainly deliver. Even when he's not getting much of a reaction, which he didn't on Monday in that segment. But you're right, when Kalisto came out, it's just like, oh no, it's like this guy's been used as a jobber for months. I mean, we've barely seen him. And he's sent to the ring to beat down Enzo. It was just like, come on.
And his music's terrible. I mean, you know what happened with me and Kalisto on Twitter, don't you? I've explained this before.
Yes.
That he blocked me because he has no sense of humour.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean... You know, that is a biased part of me, I will admit, but he is shite. He is. I don't care what anybody says. He's absolute dog shit. I couldn't care less. But I do want to say, I'm so pleased to hear this. Somebody had written into The Observer to say that, Enzo lives in LA.
Yeah.
And apparently he's been spotted numerous times in the last week walking around LA with his cruiserweight title, which I just think is genius. Like, we could stand to have a few delusional heels that don't give a shit that people don't like them, you know? And because Enzo's not cutting promos to try and pop the fans. You know, that's something I think that, like, I really enjoy Kevin Owens, and I think most of the time he is very good, but sometimes he does do these lines that I think make you laugh more than make you hate him. Like, you know, this week on SmackDown is a key example, which, you know, we'll get to SmackDown more in a minute, but, like, when Kevin Owens was in the crowd and he said, you know, here comes the real money, 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 money. What a terrible theme tune. You know, like, and that makes you laugh. You know, you're not. But with Enzo, he's so deplorable and delusional and self-absorbed that he just kind of works.
He does. Yeah. I mean, he must be aware of all this, and he's doing this really to fuel it. And I think good on him. You know, I mean, he's taken this thing that this character that almost seemed designed to bury him, and he's taking it to say, right, I'm going to make this work for me. And that's what you've got to do in WWE. Not only sometimes, you know, with a lot of people, nearly all the time.
Uh-huh.
So good on him. You know, he's, I don't know how long this is going to last, and I don't know where it's going to go. And I don't really know what's going to be left for the cruiserweight division when he moves on. But I think we should just enjoy it while it lasts.
Enjoy it while it lasts. So let's talk about SmackDown. I thought quite a dull go-home show for Hell in a Cell. Now, I want to ask you your expert analysis, because that's part of the reason we do this podcast. You have got almost a quarter of a century worth of experience covered in wrestling, Finn. So I feel like if MD can answer the why this makes sense and why they did it, maybe you can. Why?
Hang on. Is this the Hell in a Cell announcement from Shane?
No, it's not. Oh, it's right. even worse than that. So you have built up, you have a built-in story going into Hell in a Cell. One of the matches that I'm most excited for. Natalia defending her women's championship against Charlotte. They've had two big matches before. One at NXT TakeOver, one at Roadblock. Where Charlotte has won both of those matches. So the easy story is Charlotte's going in with a 2-0 record. Is she going to be able to beat it again? Can Natalia keep the strap, etc., etc., etc.? But on SmackDown, they have a tag match, and Natalia makes Charlotte tap out clean in the middle.
That's right, to the sharpshooter, remarkably easily, Kenny.
Why?
I can't believe how quickly she tapped out to that hold. I don't know why. It makes no sense. It is just nonsensical.
If Charlotte had done a promo backstage, And you know, say one of the interviewers said, you know, why did you tap out? And she said, well, you know, I've been battling a knee injury and I need to be 100% for Sunday, so I had to take the tap out in order to make sure I can recover in time for my championship match and make an explanation out of it. Then maybe. But just to tap out like that?
Well, you see, the thing is, Kenny, that's what they would have done on an Ollie Anderson wrestling show. They would have come up with something like that. And this is sports entertainment. It's not wrestling. That's why. It's not supposed to make any sense. That's actually the sort of thing that Vince Russo would say and has said frequently in the past. But you're right, how difficult would it have been to come up with a little inbuilt story there? You know, I'm going in with a knee injury, Natalia with her experience, she exploits it. Then you've got like a story going into the match. Charlotte's going in with a knee injury, we've been told about it, we know she's going to sell it. You know, the entire match is then based around Natalia going for that weakened knee, trying to get the sharpshooter on. We've got super heat. Charlotte refuses to tap out, reaches for the ropes, so the rope breaks. She's selling it. You know, can you imagine the drama, Kenny, if you come up with a story like that? And why don't we see that more often? To answer your question, I have no idea why she tapped out. I was watching it. I was thinking, why did that happen? I mean, there are some... many unanswerable questions in wrestling as there are in life, Kenny, as you know.
I was really hoping that you knew the answer there, but no.
There's probably is an explanation for it. I don't know what it is. Whatever the explanation is, cannot make sense. He cannot make sense.
Speaking of not making sense, though, tell us about Shane McMahon's announcement for the Hell in a Cell match.
Oh, well, yeah, so... So we've got Shane McMahon calls Kevin Owens out. Kevin Owens doesn't come out. Shane McMahon calls him a coward. Then says that, you know, Owens wouldn't be able to run anywhere on Sunday in the Hell in a Cell match because he would be locked inside the Hell in a Cell with him. Actually, somewhere on this show, they actually ripped off that line from Watchmen, where it was actually during the Shane Sami Zayn backstage confrontation, which I think may have some sort of bearing on what happens this Sunday. I think that's going to have a bearing on the outcome of the match on Sunday. I think Sami Zayn's going to be involved.
That'd be great to see him involved.
It would be. I mean, he's just been, you know, meandering. He's just been struggling for months. I mean, we know Zayn's a real talent. You know, he is very likable, but I'm sure he can play heel. Let's face it, a Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn partnership would be something completely different. I think they'd have great chemistry together. I don't know whether it'd be good as Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, but I think it could give it a run for its money, you know? So, anyway, yeah, so backstage we had Shane McMahon talking to Sammy, and Sammy's saying, Kevin's lost the plot, he's really dangerous. And Shane goes, he's not going to be locked in the, I'm not going to be locked in the cage with him. He's going to be locked in the cage with me. And that was a ripoff of the line from one of the characters in Watchmen. So I just thought I would mention that.
At least the writers watched something outside of WWE.
Well, yeah. So Shane tells us that Owens is going to be locked in the cage with him, in the Hell in a Cell with him, and then suddenly tacks on this unexpected stipulation that it would be false count anywhere as well. And the thing that dismayed me almost as much as the announcement, Kenny, was the cheers from the audience. It's like, why are you cheering this nonsensical announcement? Can you explain that to me, Kenny?
Fans are idiots. That's my explanation.
But he was just like,
it makes no sense. But also, the other thing is like, I realize, I mean, I do think that Shane and Kevin Owens has been the highlight of SmackDown the last kind of month or so. It genuinely has. And I thought that for the most part, the closing segment that they had was really fun. And but, you know, like Kevin Owens is talking about he's going to throw Shane off the cell and da-da-da-da, and you're like, right, so we're basically just saying now that Hell in a Cell doesn't mean you're confined to the cell anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah. If that's the case, why do we need a cell?
Well, we don't, do we? Why? So, why? Well, we need the cell, Kenny, because the event's called Hell in a Cell.
I mean, it's just like, you know, I feel like we're playing a video game, and it's just like, so, listen, my favourite wrestling set of all time, and I think it's just because of nostalgia, is the WrestleMania 9 set, right? That's just what I think of when I think of my favourite. So, like, you know,
The Caesar's Palace set?
Yeah! Oh, I love it. Thinkus Maximus? Give me a bit of that. So, you know, it's absolute dog shit, but in the best possible way. So, like, if I play a video game, I'd be like, oh, I want to do Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman at WrestleMania 9. Yeah. But it doesn't matter if it's WrestleMania 9 or not. You can just, as long as you get the match. And it's like, this match doesn't really need to be in a cell, because what they're planning on doing is not going to be in the cell. So it's just it's almost just like a video game set. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just kind of, that's where it is.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just had a false count anywhere match and allowed, like, Jinder and Nakamura to have the Hell in a Cell match.
The only positive is at least that Jinder will not have his name on Hell in a Cell. Like, you know, there's been like 40 Hell in a Cell matches and he will not have been in one of them. So at least there's something. Well, we're keeping away from something.
What difference does that make?
It just makes me feel a little bit better. You know, it just, because Hell in a Cell, for the most part, has been a big match over the years. And I just don't want Jinder Mahal to be a part of it. I just want, to keep...
Well, okay.
He already has surpassed the combined title reigns of Ric Flair in the WWE. I mean somebody said today, Owen Hart was never WWF champion.
No.
Jinder has been champion for, like, what, 100 days? Something like that?
Yeah,
anyway, but I do think the Shane Kevin Owens match is going to be the most exciting match in the show. I think Sammy could play into it. I want to ask you though, what do you think of Shane McMahon as a performer now? Do you think that he is worthy is not the word, but do you think that he's someone who kind of deserves, based on the character and all that sort of stuff, to be in the spot that he's in?
Well, judging by the reactions to him, yes. I mean, to me, he's been a source of tremendous irritation for many years. But today's fans, and ever since he returned, people cheer him. People like him. So he's getting that big reaction. I mean, you're right. This has been the most entertaining feud on SmackDown over the last few weeks. And no doubt this will be the biggest match on the show and the most memorable match of the show. But I fear that will probably be because Shane will do some ridiculous stunt. He had the match with Styles. That was a long match with Styles at WrestleMania. And I've got to say, my opinion of him did go up as an in-ring performer, because he did a lot more than normal in that match with Styles. I mean, some of it was a bit disjointed, some of it was scrappy, some of it didn't look really all that professional, but Shane's not like, you know, a pro wrestler. He's like, I'm not really sure what you would describe him as. He's a performer, I suppose. Which is like an all-encompassing term. So, I mean, he's a guy that can do these matches. He's willing to take the big bumps. He'll take the punishment. He's willing to make a big match like this work by doing the things that I wouldn't say other wrestlers would be unwilling to do, because that's sort of unfair on the other wrestlers who aren't allowed to be in this position. I know there is some resentment towards Shane because he gets these matches and he gets these environments in which there are shortcuts. You know, he can take shortcuts, he can do the big stunts, and he can make the big impression. He can maintain his status with the audience as, you know, the fearless guy. So it's sort of like there's quite a few contradictions going on there. But I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he's the main event here, and it sort of doesn't, he doesn't feel like he doesn't deserve to be in the main event. So that means that my, you know, instincts, my natural reaction to Shane now has changed, and I've got to accept that, yes, he is worthy of this spot, you know, as much as, you know, that it's sort of almost painful for me to say that, but circumstances dictate that that is true.
There you go. So Sunday is Hell in a Cell. We've got Shane and Kevin Owens in the cell. We've got the Usos and the New Day in the cell. We've got Nakamura and Jinder, which we'll talk about in a second, for the title, which is not in the cell. Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler. Charlotte versus Natalya for the women's title. We've got a pre-show match with the Hype Bros and Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable. And am I missing a match? AJ Styles and Baron Corbin for the US title, sorry.
How did you forget that one, Kenny?
Well, I mean, it shows you. It's so forgettable, you know?
Don't forget that the Fashion Police are apparently going to be making a comeback too.
There'll be a new Fashion Files on Sunday. So, Jinder and Nakamura is not in the cell. There's a lot of speculation about, you know, we talked last week, would Jinder maybe lose the title? He's now been announced on the Raw Tour of India.
Is that official?
Yes, he has been announced for that.
Interestingly, so they're doing two dates in Delhi, aren't they, in December?
Yeah, and apparently he... somebody said that there was a press thing that went out in India that listed Jinder as a two-time WWE champion. Which, I don't, yeah, maybe spells that he's going to lose it and then get it back. But it's interesting. Yeah. One of our
they might have just deliberately leaked that information, knowing that it would get out, you know, as a red herring. They may well have done that on purpose. They've done that before.
They may very well have. But one of our listeners, Raul, actually, who is a very, very loyal listener to Inside the Ropes and all of our podcasts, he is Indian and lives in India. So we've got a man on the ground who can tell us what's going on. He says that... there was recently a story on a news show in India about, I'm going to butcher the name again. Is it, what was the Indian girl in the Mae Young Classic?
I can't remember. She was like a powerlifter type, wasn't she?
Yes, Karina Devi or something like that. But anyway, there was a story on her recently about, you know, how she was in the tournament and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, one of India's own. And then, Kavita Devi is her name.
That rings a bell.
Powerlifter from India. And apparently there's been no mention of Jinder anywhere, really, in India. So even though they're making it like it's been a big deal in India, like it's not really hit yet. So
it's not hit yet, right, Kenny? But any minute now. Probably before we finish recording this podcast, he'll hit.
He'll be bigger than Hogan by the time this is over. You know, I can see him getting endorsement deals. You know, I think Jinder could be the new face of Slim Jim, take over from Randy Savage. I hear that WWE are trying to get Jinder to present an Oscar next year. So he's going to be everywhere before you know it, like a bad smell.
I think we talked about bad smells in Jinder last week, didn't we?
We did. Now, before we went on air, you read me a Jinder quote. He had about Nakamura. Please do read that for the listeners.
This is what Jinder said in a backstage promo on SmackDown this week. I will be standing tall as Nakamura crinkles his ugly face in a pile of regret as he realizes I am still your WWE champion. Nakamura is not the only one who's crinkling his face, whether it be ugly or pretty, in a pile of regret at the thought of Jinder as WWE champion. Isn't that right, Kenny?
I can feel both of our faces crinkling along with the thousands of listeners listening right now. So there are people on buses right now crinkling their face.
Crinkling. Yeah, I'm crinkling right now, Kenny. Crinkling.
Very quickly, we did say that we'd check out the Cody Rhodes and Minoru Suzuki match from Death of Dishonor. I think we both kind of feel the same way about it. It was very average, not really that interesting. I was expecting more from Minoru Suzuki in it. I don't know if he was... It just felt fine. Like I didn't feel like it was anything special. I felt like the Okada match had a much bigger feel to it than this one.
Absolutely agree. I mean, it just felt extremely average. There was just, you know, neither any intensity or drama. It just never really got going. I mean,
never got to second gear, 10 minutes long.
Yeah, it just finished, just came from out of nowhere. You know what this match needed, don't you, Kenny?
What's that?
A kick-out orgy.
It did. It needed a kick-out orgy. It needed a massive kick-out orgy. Which, by the way, the amount
of
people...
That was where they went wrong, Kenny. That simple. They should have just come to us. You know, they should have just come to us and we could have just laid it out for them and it would have been super successful.
I mean, people have asked about... They want a kick-out orgy t-shirt. That's what people want. I mean, can you imagine people walking about WrestleMania with kick-out orgy on a t-shirt? Maybe, you never know. So we've left people waiting for a while, but you did decide to humour me and stick on part of Season 1, Episode 1 of Total Bellas. So just to preface this again, Total Bellas, the spin-off of Total Divas, the Bellas and Daniel Bryan and John Cena had been a big part of the Total Divas show, so they decided to do a spin-off, and the premise of the first series was that Nikki Bella had just had her neck injury, so she'd had neck fusion surgery, I think it was, and she was living in Tampa with John Cena in his massive house, and Brie and Daniel Bryan decided to come and move in with them to help look after Nikki, and you know, because she can't drive and stuff, and decided to move in. So you basically got this dinner that takes place. I'm setting the scene for Finn just to... I can feel him shaking his head already. But like, we've got John Cena at the head of the table, with Nicole there, and with Kathy and Johnny Ace, and with Brie and Bryan, and I think JJ, the brother's there as well. And before they begin dinner, John Cena wants to impart some house rules upon everyone. So Finn, please take me through, and don't spare any detail on any of your thoughts here. Talk me through your sort of live experience of watching John Cena's house rules.
Yeah, it just felt so humorless. And the thing is, there was John Laurinaitis cracking up and Daniel Bryan's there in like disbelief and other people are there thinking, well, is he joking? And you're watching it and you're thinking, at the end of this, is he just going to say, ah, ha, 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 I had you there. But he was apparently serious. I mean, it was just bizarre. And there was Nicole, she admitted, you know, she's saying, well, John's a difficult guy to live with after he'd reeled off all these rules about how there's a formal dinner each Wednesday and afterwards, like the men.
Let me read out to you what he says. Here's what John Cena says. These are the house rules. It's very simple. Respect the house as if it were your own, and if your habits are leaving towels on the floor, then change your habits and respect ours. Formal dinner once a week, usually on Wednesday. Every morning we will have morning coffee together. We will have an evening fire outside. If you guys are going to be up late, please text me or tell me, do you have any questions? He then goes on to say that post-dinner, the ladies will retire to the powder room and the men will retire to the cigar room.
I think, wasn't it the drawing room? Surely not the powder room.
Well, there was some womanly room. I don't know. But yeah, what did you think of John Cena? Because, you know, you rag on him quite a lot, Finn, in his WWE performances. Compare him on screen in WWE to being on screen in Total Bellas.
I just felt that his character on screen in WWE seemed more realistic than his character on Total Bellas. I mean, it just seems so phony, like he's just playing a role, like he's not even alive. It's just like he sort of almost ran the house like some sort of luxurious army barracks. You know, I mean, I understand that you need rules to make that. I've never been in the military, right? But I understand that you need rules to make the military machine work. You've got to have discipline, you know, all that has to exist. But that doesn't have to exist in John Cena's house. So, yeah, you know, he's reading off all those rules. And the other thing was, like, he mentioned something about, was it alligators in the lakes outside?
I think he did.
And then he also said, and I'm not, obviously, I'm not saying this for comic effect, given the events of this week. He said, if you guys are going to be up late, this is to the whole table, please text me or tell me, because this is a shoot first state and I have a lot of guns. And it was just like, what? And then, so as you correctly put it, imparted these rules to his, you know, relatives, guests, who were just there in disbelief. Nicole, in a talking head spot, says, "Yes, I know John's very difficult to live with. I've had to sign a contract to live with him, to live there in his house." She's had to sign a contract. And it's like, what is this?
Would you sign a contract to live with John Cena?
You know what? John Cena came across as one of the most boring, humorless people I think I've ever seen, Kenny. I mean, it was just like, why would you want, you know, why would everyone have to congregate for morning coffee and an evening fire? You know, I noticed that Downton Abbey was mentioned quite a few times, and it was almost as if John was trying to create his own Downton Abbey.
Oh God, and it was so good.
I really did feel like that. I mean, both Bellas mentioned that Downton Abbey, and I think they're both big fans of it. Maybe they see themselves as social climbers. Maybe by having all these rules and, you know, repairing to this room, you know, and doing these things at this time, maybe they like imagine that they're just like, you know, the family in Downton Abbey. You know, I mean, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what they're aspiring to be, the modern version of that family. You know what? I watched Downton Abbey, Kenny, and I cannot remember the name of the family in Downton Abbey. And I am absolutely embarrassed by that. Even more embarrassed than admitting that I used to watch Downton Abbey.
Wow. There's a lot of things coming out of the woodwork here. My favourite part of this whole house rules bit was one person's reaction. And that was Daniel Bryan. Because he's just looking at Cena, and you can just see him thinking, "You're an abominable prick, aren't you?" Like, you can just tell, he's just, oh God. And then, like, he's got this rule where he's like, no shoes are to be worn in the house. So, Brian comes down, dressed in a suit, with his socks on, and John Cena's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, I'm here for dinner. He's like, "We must wear shoes at formal dinner." And he's like, "You told me not to wear shoes in the house!" And you're like, I mean, it's funny, like, so one of my friends, Ollie, has started trying to get his girlfriend into wrestling, and they've been watching Total Divas.
Okay.
Because she really enjoys Total Divas. And one of her favourite parts of Total Divas is that every week, John Cena likes to impart some wisdom onto people. He likes to impart wisdom onto everyone that he comes across. But he is one of the most boring people ever. Like, I don't know how he's allowed to come across this boring. Like, he's just a tyrant. I mean, his house looks like has anybody ever lived in it? Like, there's no, you know.
It's like a show home, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like you walked into, you know, DHS or something. And you're just walking past it. And he's got, like, a personal chef and all that sort of stuff. And you're like, who are you? I thought you're supposed to be this, like, guy from Boston who's just, like, you know. A guy from Boston who's just, like, you know, made it and all that sort of stuff. But no, he's making his girlfriend sign ultimatums to live with him and signing away any right to get any of his money and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, if you are the perfect host, you don't impose those rules on your guests. You want them to make them feel comfortable, don't you? You know, in the modern era, this is not, you know, the 1920s, you know, and, you know, I'm sorry, John, but you're not a member of the aristocracy. You know, you aren't. Sorry. You know, I know you may think you are, and you may present yourself to the world as this person who's like this social climber, but it's just like, come on, you know, just be nice to people and just, you know, allow, you know, live a little. I don't know. He just seems like he's, everything's so strict. And it's like, is it real, Kenny, or is it set up for the cameras? And if it's set up for the, obviously reality TV, so much of it's scripted. And if it's, but if it's set up for the cameras and it's not real, why would he choose to present himself in this fashion? He just comes across as so uncool. It's just a drip, isn't it? It's just a bore. It's just like, can you imagine Kenny going out on a night out with this guy? It would just be, you know, you'd just be like going into the toilets, you know, and getting your girlfriend to ring and say, God, can you just call and tell us, you know, that the boiler's bust or the, you know, the house has been hit by lightning or something, so I've got to come home. Just call me 5 minutes, you know, anything, you know. Bringing Tesco trucks crash through the front window, anything to get me out of here. That's what you would be doing, because you wouldn't want to spend another minute with this like titanic, you know, dweeb. He just comes across as an absolute dweeb. I just don't get it, Kenny. I mean, maybe this is him, you know. I mean, obviously he's been very successful in life, been very successful in wrestling, despite my attempts, you know, to turn people against him. You know, and these are the fruits of his labour. You know, and I absolutely do not resent him for that, Kenny. He has earned that money. In WWE, you know, you earn your money. You know, unless you're Brock Lesnar, who's getting the sweetheart deal, and obviously he had to go through lots of different things to get that sweetheart deal. But full-time pro wrestlers or wrestlers who've started in developmental and then worked their way up, they earn their cash. So I absolutely do not resent his financial success. Absolutely no way do I resent him for that. You know, he deserves every dime of it, I'm sure.
There was a great moment.
What a way to live, Kenny. Way to live. I couldn't live like that, put it that way.
I just want to see you and John Cena going for dinner now. You know, like, it was just, because I feel like you just eye roll the whole time, the entire time.
He just doesn't strike me as an interesting person. I don't think he comes across, as from what I've seen, as a horrible person, but just somebody who doesn't seem to have any self-awareness, that these things are just a constant source of irritation to everyone else. I mean, which basically sums up his career, doesn't it? Constant source of irritation to me.
So if you were made to have dinner with John Cena, and you could just ask him any question in the world, what question would you ask him?
The question I think I would ask him was, you do realise that so much of what you do in the ring looks terrible, don't you? And that you are yelling out spots all the time and just doing these things that just look really phony. Is it because you realise you're so over that you and that Vince McMahon's never going to say anything to you? Is that the reason why you've never tried to improve these things and you don't try and lower your voice and don't try and make things more realistic? Is it because you can't do it, or is it because you just think, well, I don't need to? Something like that. Some sort of question like that. I've often felt that John Cena's a guy that sort of like, he's sort of in on the joke. You know, he's out there doing that. He's the star. He's the big name. He's the guy making the big money. Doesn't really matter what he does in the ring, because he's always going to be that guy. And if you're criticizing what he does in the ring, it's almost, you know, it's exercising futility. And he knows that. And it's like his joke on his critics that his stuff looks like that, that his ring work is as it is. It's like him sticking it to his critics. Is that the reason why he does it? That's the thing I think I would ask him, is that, do you do these things because you can get away with it and you don't really care? Or do you do these things because that's the best you can do? Something like that. That sort of question.
I'd like to think that as soon as you sit down, he says, Finn, thank you for flying across the pond. Because, of course, you would need to go to him. He's not going to come to you.
Listen, Kenny, I wouldn't want him in my house. He'd start imposing all these rules on things and moving things around. You know, my house has got some style. Doesn't look like a show home that's been dressed by some, you know, some overpaid interior designer. You know, I don't need that in my home, Kenny. You'll be coming in and start changing things around.
Oh, I just love the idea of, like, you know, WWE office phones. Finn, we need to just set up this dinner with you and John. He can be in town on the 14th. No, I don't want him in my house. I'll fly to him. It's fine.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I just think the guy is just sort of, there's sort of like a joke there, and the joke is on the people. The joke's really on me, Kenny. You know, there's me criticizing him, but it doesn't matter because he's still a big name. He's still a big star. And I just, that's the something I would like to quiz him about is, you know, are you aware of this? And I don't know whether he is, but that's the question I'd like to know. Is he aware of all these things? And is it because that's the best he can do? Or is it because he doesn't care? Something like that.
I always loved when he was on the Steve Austin podcast and Austin pulled him up about how bad his STF looked. Which was great.
But it's like, you know, you think, well, why does the STF look that terrible? I've never been able to work it out. Why does it look that terrible? I mean, this is not difficult to just make it look like it hurts instead of just putting it on with no pressure at all. I don't get it, Kenny.
No idea. No idea. And I also want to say, one of my favorite Total Divas moments with John Cena was back in the early days when Daniel Bryan and Brie went to, you know, John Cena's house, and Bryan's just like, this is excessive. He doesn't need this. You know, because like, he's on the road all the time, so why do you need this house that could house 25 people? And then they go to Bryan's house, which is tiny, and Cena goes in and he's just kind of baffled by the whole thing. You know, because all wooden and everything, he goes, where's the TV? And Brian's like, I don't have a TV. And Cena just does not know how to respond. You don't have a TV?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, he can't compute that. Anyway.
Lots of people don't have TVs. You know, my dad hasn't had a TV in at least 30 years. So,
Anything?
No, he hasn't had a TV probably since the early 80s. Yeah, and more like 35 years. So, he's just not interested in... Pardon me?
Did he just read them stuff?
Yeah, that's right. Listens to the radio. He's got no... He doesn't have the internet. He's got no interest in TV. He doesn't have the internet. Actually, he doesn't have a telephone. But lots of people... I wouldn't say lots of people, but some people at least live like that.
There you go. Just finally, before we head off into the podcast sunset, Triple H announced the other day, and it was confirmed at some tapings, that an NXT TakeOver in Houston is going to be called NXT TakeOver War Games. They are bringing the two-cage War Games match to Houston. I am going to tell you who's in the match, so if you don't want that spoiled, turn it off now, or turn us off now. It's going to be the three members of the Undisputed Era, which is Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish, against the Authors of Pain and Roderick Strong, and the three male members of Sanity, Alexander Wolfe, Killian Dane, and Eric Young. So they're replicating the 1998 Team WCW, Team NWO, Team Horseman. Or was it Team NWO, Wolfpack, Team NWO, Black and White, Team WCW? Was that the way it was? It was three teams. There was three teams.
Yeah.
Of three. What was your thoughts when they announced that they're bringing back War Games, or they're bringing it, it's going to be the first time it's in WWE? What's your take on it?
I mean, it's something that Triple H has always been a fan of. I know it's something that he's always wanted to do because he was a huge fan of Jim Crockett Promotions growing up, a huge fan of War Games, which started in 87. Dusty Rhodes' invention, as everyone knows. It would be nice to think that they're going to do a good job with it. I think enough time has elapsed now that there won't be. And also, no one expects really blood anymore in cage matches. I mean, that was the thing that really screwed the War Games concept for WCW, was when they wouldn't do blading. You know, obviously, you've seen the War Games at WrestleWar 92, right? The famous Sting's Dangerous Alliance. Well, that's my favorite War Games ever. And I know a lot of people from my sort of age group and my sort of people who have been watching since the early 90s, that was their favorite War Games as well. And the reason, a big part of the reason for that was not only because it was so exciting, but also because there was so much blood in it, which really heightened the drama. So when they banned the blade in WCW, the War Games really lost a lot of its impact because people were expecting blood. I think enough time has elapsed now that people won't expect blood and people won't think, oh, that wasn't very good because, you know, four or five guys didn't cut the foreheads. So I think, and because the talent in this match is so good, and they'll all be wanting to make this thing a success because it is a historic match, I'm really looking forward to it. It doesn't matter to me now. Enough time has passed. It doesn't matter that there won't be intentional blood in it. There might be hardware blood in it, but there won't be intentional blood. We know they banned the blade. So I think these guys are going to put together a hell of a match, Kenny. I'm really looking forward to it. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I know a lot of people who are traditional War Games fans are not crazy about the fact that they're doing it kind of a la the 98 match. Which I think was 98. 98 was the last War Games, right? They didn't do it in 99.
I would rather not say, Kenny. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I'm going to find out where we're talking right now. But basically, they're replicating, which is one of the lesser beloved War Games matches. But I don't think that really matters.
I mean, really, I don't think it does either, because, I mean, that's like 19 years ago now.
Yeah, so, just to say, 98 was the last year, and it was Team WCW, which was DDP, Roddy Piper, and The Warrior, against Team NW Hollywood, which was Hollywood Hogan, Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray, against NW Wolfpack, Kevin Nash, Sting, and Lex Luger.
It's all coming back to me now, Kenny. That was the one at Fall Brawl.
Yep.
And it was an absolute disaster, that match. Absolute disaster. I remember doing a review of that show in Power Slam, and my title for the show was "The Worst Card in the World Ever."
So just quickly while we're here, let's go through the card and just give me a kind of quick one-line summary of any memories you have of these matches, okay? Because if it was the worst card ever, it might evoke some memories for you.
Oh, well, I'll only be able to remember some of the matches, but
I'll read you the matches out, and you just tell me if there's any memories you've got. So we've got the British Bulldog and Jim Neville Neidhart against the Dancing Fools, Alex Wright and Disco Inferno.
Yeah, I think this was the match in which Davey Boy Smith suffered the back injury, because what they did was they had to install a trap door in the ring for the Warrior to make his entrance. And I believe it was in this match that Smith was slammed on the trap door, suffered a back injury, and ended up in hospital. And I mean, what a mess it made of him. So, I mean, I don't really remember the match, if I'm honest with you. That's the only thing I really remember about it. I just remember it being really flat. But, I mean, Davey and Jim Neidhart were a waste of space by that point. What were the Dancing Fools? The Dancing Fools. That was what Stevie Richards was called in ECW. Eric Ripoff, that's what they called him, didn't they? I don't really remember much about the match. I imagine it was just really, really lousy. I mean, I remember the matches that I do remember were Scott Hall versus Conan. And this was a particularly repugnant match, which was designed to actually exploit Scott Hall's alcoholism. You go back and think, so, wow, how the hell was this allowed into the ring? So Scott was there pretending to drink from, whatever it was, gin and tonic or whatever it was, or whiskey and coke. I can't remember what it was he was drinking, probably not alcohol. But he was feigning that he was inebriated in the match with Conan. I think it was Vincent, it was Mike Jones, it was Virgil. He was at ringside and he kept passing the drink to Scott. So that was the whole story of the match, that Scott was like pissed up going into the match. And then Conan scored this like fluke win over a drunk Scott Hall. And I vividly remember that Conan celebrated like he just won a gold medal at the Olympics.
I mean, the thing is, when you look at this card though, like, I mean, on paper, it doesn't look too, you know, Chris Jericho beating a Goldberg impersonator. You get the battle of the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott. You've got Juventud Guerrera and Silver King. You've got Saturn and Raven, Dean Malenko and Kurt Hennig. The main event, when you look at it, I mean, it's there are like eight big names, right? You've got Diamond Dallas Page, Rowdy Roddy Piper, The Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, Kevin Nash, Sting, Lex Luger, and Stevie Ray.
You would have thought with that amount of talent that they would have been able to make that match work. But it was just all designed to set up Warrior and Hogan, which then set up their abomination at Halloween Havoc the next month. And it was just, they had the dry ice, and everyone had sort of pretended to pass out when the Warriors then coming up through the trap door. And it was just terrible, Kenny, absolutely terrible. So I can absolutely guarantee that this match at the next TakeOver event will be better than that.
And I think what's great about it is we've never seen the two ring thing in WWE, and it's just gonna be really interesting, just really jarring to watch it in a good way, you know. It's, and I think that the three teams are a great choice. I think that the Authors of Pain are very underrated. I really enjoy them. I think that they've come into their own a lot over the time they were working with DIY, and they've kind of, I feel like they've almost grasped the type of wrestlers that they need to be, which is hard-hitting big men.
Definitely. I mean, I'd like to see them on the main roster. I mean, maybe this will be their final night, and maybe they'll come in. I mean, like, the main roster needs a new tag team, particularly SmackDown, and I think these guys could really be it. So, I mean, it's time for them to be called up, in my opinion. I mean, they look the part. As you say, they've improved greatly. I mean, at one point when they were in the ring, you were like, you were scared that somebody was going to get really hurt. You know, something really awful was going to happen. So I'd like to see them on the main roster. I'm looking forward to the match. I mean, it's so long since we've seen War Games that to most people, this is a brand new concept, Kenny.
Yeah, I'm the only shame of it, and I don't even necessarily think this is a thing to point blame at WWE, but I do wish that, like, when that match happens, I think there's just going to be one thing missing from it, and that's that Dusty Rhodes should have been in the front row getting to watch it.
But they weren't to know
that he was going to pass away, so, and I'm sure they absolutely should have a tribute to Dusty Rhodes on that night, because, you know, he came up with the match, and he had nothing to do with that last one, so don't blame
him. It just shows you, you know, the power of Triple H, that he's actually been able to push this one through, because he's been wanting to do this match for so long. So, I mean, I'm sure he's really pleased that he's managed, or maybe Vince just doesn't care about NXT anymore. Maybe it's just say, just get on with it, do what you want. But Vince, you know, was not big on using other people's ideas. Well, sometimes he was, and then he would, and then he would slightly change them and then sort of, you know, convince himself that they were his ideas. You know, at least in this case, they're actually owning up to it and saying, yes, this was not our invention, but we're going to use it as effectively a tribute to Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's everything for this week. You know, we've covered, you know, War Games, the lead up to Hell in a Cell, Raw, SmackDown, Stephanie on Lorraine, change of WWF to WWE, and of course, the dinner that we all want to witness, Finn Martin and John Cena, one day. In Tampa, Florida. You could do a video diary, like a vlog on the way over. You know, you could be the airport saying, No, you're giving it a miss. Okay. You could do a wee vlog, and you could be, you know, at the airport saying, just taking a shit. That's going to be more interesting than this dinner. Anyway.
Can't say I felt any warmth from either Cena or Nicole from seeing them on the show. And, you know,
Who feels more realistic, Nicole or John?
I don't know. I mean, it's a toss-up, isn't it? They both just feel so, like, phony. Like, they're not even, like... It's like she's, like, some sort of, like, robot, like a Stepford wife. I mean, what he's seeing? It's like this... He's like this just sort of... I don't know. He's like this plastic guy that's just not even human. I wish them all the best, Kenny.
You wish them all the best. With that in mind, we hope that you enjoy your weekend. And just remember, everybody, that if you invite someone over for dinner, that maybe just go easy on the house rules, you know? Maybe just do what everybody else does, right, in life, which is when you bring someone over to your house and they fuck you off when they do something you don't want them to, you angrily call them names in your head. It's what everybody else does. Finn, where can people find you on the internet, where they can either buy some of your ebooks or read some of your stuff or just chat to you?
They can if they want to check out my books. You will find a link at www.finleymartin.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at Finley Martin and at PowerSlam Online. Also on Facebook at PowerSlam Online. As I mentioned earlier, I did a little tribute to Lance Russell earlier this week, so check that out. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 on Twitter or Inside_the Ropes. You can go to insidetheropes.co.uk for your tickets to Kevin Nash in London next month, the night after Survivor Series, or for Shawn Michaels in January. And also, we are planning to announce early next week a one-night-only show in Glasgow before the end of the year with a WWE Hall of Famer. So that should be interesting. And it's not Coco Beware, so be happy. Yeah, so we'll be back next week, and we hope you all enjoy Hell in a Cell. And next week, one of two things will be happening. Either Finn and I will be Ric Flair strutting with happiness that Nakamura is the WWE champion, or we'll be holding a vigil for the WWE championship, because that fucker still got it.
Yes, we will be watching Hell in a Cell. I mean, you know, how would you react to it, Kenny? You know, it's quite an intimidating prospect. When the bell rings on the match, it's going to be like, do you leave the room? You know, do you just come back after it's finished? You know, because you just can't bring yourself to watch. It's going to be a tricky one, isn't it?
Very tricky. But I'm going to leave you with these parting words, ladies and gentlemen. The words of Finn Martin: the gender era, bereft of entertainment. We'll see you next week. If I'm sad tonight.